Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Didn't work today, so life is good.
I know. I didn't either. We both got our Thursday set for the show today, so that's great. Well, it is Thursday, September 17th, and if you're listening right now at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, you're listening live, and we would absolutely love for you to call us today, and let me go ahead and give out the call-in number. It's 1-718-766-4332, and we are going to continue our discussion about treating childhood apraxia and phonological disorders, which are both considered speech disorders. And again, if you haven't been listening for the last, forever, it feels like we've been talking about apraxia, you can go and find the background information for all of these discussions at my website at teachmetotalk.com. Excuse me, I've got a cough, Kate. Ooh, sorry about that. Those September allergies are kicking in, I think. But you can find all of this background information at the website by looking in the category called apraxia. And then I've just released a new DVD about treating apraxia in toddlers and preschoolers, and you can find information about that as well. And that's where we've kind of taken the foundational pieces of information for our shows the past several weeks, except we are talking about them at length, it seems. And today we're going to pick up with talking about what we sort of glossed over last week, and then I got an email from a mom about it. So I think we'll start with just reading this email and then talking about it. Kate, did I send you that email? Have you seen this yet?
I do have the email. I do want to interject one thing, Laura, for any parents or parents concerned about their child's speech and language development, or even therapists thinking, gee, I don't see many kids who are quote-unquote apraxic, just to keep in mind that whether or not your child has a formal diagnosis or whether or not as a therapist you're convinced that a child is apraxic, these strategies are really effective whether the child has a diagnosis or not. So I hope people don't tune out thinking, well, I've never even heard of apraxia, because say you have a child who's 24 months and has been in therapy for 5 or 6 months and has made very little progress to date. You may have a child who's apraxic and not recognize it.
Right. So, or your therapist may be so reluctant to diagnose it because so many pediatric speech-language pathologists really buy into, I'm not even going to mention that as a possibility until after they're three.
Right.
And we don't happen to feel that way.
No.
But lots of people are pretty gun-shy about that. The main reason is because apraxia-kids.org, which is a wonderful website, and it's the website for the, let's see if I get this right, Childhood Apraxia of Speech Association of North America, CASANA. Do they say, I don't know, maybe they don't, maybe they call it something. Do you know what CASANA is called?
No, I don't.
Okay, I don't either. I'm scared to even say that. Sorry if I've offended anybody by not knowing that, but they really recommend that a child not be officially diagnosed until he or she is over three. But, Kate, your point is very well taken, because you might just totally dismiss that as a possibility for your child and not do any of these motor speech techniques, and then you could have potentially missed out on months and months and months of progress because you didn't treat it in the right way. So
right.
I love that caution there, and I don't think we've said that in this whole series, so great point to bring up.
Well, and, you know, because you and I both, as we work with kids, think he could be, maybe is, maybe isn't, but gee, these strategies are working.
Right.
So, you know, and so I just wanted people, because I could hear, think that some people listening might think, never heard of that, doesn't apply to my child. And
right.
It may very well, whether he is or isn't apraxic. So just keep in mind the strategies and suggestions and all the things we talk about and try and implement those at home. And watch Laura's DVD to see how it's done specifically, but don't want people to tune us out because they don't know we're talking about something relevant to them.
Right, and really you need to think about it. If your child is hard to understand, this is a show for you. If your toddler is saying things that are off target, that his words don't quite match what you think he's saying, these techniques are still applicable. So any kind of intelligibility problem or pronunciation problem, these strategies would be effective for you. So that was a great point. All right, let's read this email. Hello, Laura. First of all, I want to thank you so much for your fantastic video, Teach Me to Talk. Okay, blah, 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 blah. Let me get down to the...
Oh, you can go ahead and read that. Would you prefer I read it?
No. I'm getting to the meat of it. Sorry about that. My daughter is exactly 19 months now, and she's been receiving speech therapy from Early Intervention Services here in New York since early June when she was 16 months old. First of all, bravo to that mom for getting her child in so early, because a lot of moms, I think at 16 months, would just say, oh, well, she's just not ready yet. She's just not going to talk yet. That's okay, and not do a thing about it. So this is a really proactive mom, don't you think, Kate?
It sure sounds like it from what she goes on to say. Also, she may have a very astute pediatrician who recognized early on, because a lot of times it is that two-year well baby check when doctors say, how many words does she have? And mom kind of says, two, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of time between.
Yeah.
A lot of time between when they should have started asking that question at 12 months, 15 months, 18 months, and they don't get around to it until the kid turns two. So
I just think
you're right.
That so many physicians, pediatricians, tend to think, two, that's when kids talk. I think it's, you know, and it's true, kids talk when they're two, or at least they're supposed to, but really they should be doing a lot of things before that. So, yes,
right.
Either mom was, I'm guessing it might have been a combination of both. She was very much in tune to her child's development, and the pediatrician was receptive to her concern. So,
probably so. That's a good point. Okay, she says, but I have yet to see much progress, unfortunately. Her receptive language is pretty good. She follows basic commands like put that on the table, throw that in the garbage, sit down, come here, bring mommy the ball, take the binky out of your mouth and give it to mommy. So the mom recognizes it's not a receptive language problem because she's understanding lots of different commands. And those sound great to me,
mm-hmm.
You know, all those examples that she gave. So that's terrific. She didn't just say she knows shoes or she knows milk. She seems to understand, like mom said, lots of very basic commands that mom might give in everyday life. Then she goes on to say, but as far as expressive language goes, she has her own approximations of a few words, but no real words yet. She will point to a duck and say, da. She will also point to a dog and say the same thing, da. Or she will imitate the first sound of whatever word you say. If I say, mommy has to go to the potty, and then she, so cute, she says, sorry for oversharing. That's darling. She will say the P sound. Another example, if I point to a pig and ask her, what's this, she'll make the P sound. So it sounds like she's just going, pah, instead of, you know, doing the whole word pig or potty. Her biggest problem, and I love how she goes on to identify what this is, her biggest problem is that she cannot say vowel sounds other than the short A. Everything is mama, ba-ba. I wonder if she says da-da or da-da. Yeah, and then I wonder if it really is one version of that A. Because when I read this, I say, how would you read it, Kate? If you were going to read, do you have her email in front of you?
I do. I would say mama and I would say da-da.
Me too. So I wonder if she does have two different variations of that A, or if it really is mama, ba, ba, da, da, ya, ya. I mean, it could be. It
mm-hmm.
could just be that one single thing. The problem with English is there are so many different dialects. You know, I have a very southern dialect, but I'm not quite as southern sounding as my relatives are in North Mississippi. You know, I have some different vowel sounds from them now that I've lived out of the deep south for 15 years.
So she thinks.
What?
So you think.
All right, you northern person. Yeah, we have very different vowel inventories. You know,
I'm getting much better at my southern vowels. You have to, you don't hear me in action too much, but funny, I'm always telling mothers, use your southern accent. I was telling an Arabic mother the other day that laughing as I was saying it. She got
How did she take that?
She got it. No, because
did
I
she?
Was... I was encouraging her to emphasize the vowel part of the word so that,
yeah.
And this will be relevant to this little girl, so I won't blab on about it now, but I may interject later. So go ahead with this the story.
Okay. So I'm wondering if she really does say, if there's a difference there in how she says short A, if she really does say mama and dad, dad. Because usually that's how most kids
I'm
say it.
I'm guessing it is. I know. But I don't even know how I would write da, da. You know what I mean? I would probably write dad, dad myself.
I mean, I would have spelled it the same way. When I write dad, dad, I write D-A-D-A.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, even though you might think an A, you might think, okay, just short A and long A, there are many more variations of A than just short, with which I think about A, or long, which is A. So, again, speech pathologists are pretty darn picky when we're transcribing this. We transcribe things phonetically. So there are many, many, many I tried to find a good source today to see exactly how many vowels they say that American English has. And, again, they say it really depends on your dialect. And
yeah, most speakers, it would definitely depend.
Yeah. Most American speakers have 14 to 20 vowels that they use. And British have more. Most British speakers have more than 30.
Wow.
So there's a big variation with how many different vowel sounds, even with adults, and you know, depending on what part of the country you live in.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it would be interesting if it would have worked out for this mom to be on, because she could have shared this information. And then she goes on to say, okay, for the life of me and her speech therapist, we cannot get her to say moo for the cow sound. She just can't pronounce that double O, oo sound, or any other vowel sounds besides the short A. And she greatly overgeneralizes. Any word that begins with M is mama. She says, I, mommy, and mama. The cow, moo, says mama. The cat, meow, says mama. She'll point at a baby and say ba-ba, but bubbles are also ba-ba. For bye-bye, she also says ba-ba while waving. If I ask her a question, do you want milk? The answer is ya-ya instead of yes. The answer to any question I ask her is ya-ya. For the horse sound, she'll say, I wonder if she says na-na. I wonder if she means
na-na.
She probably means na-na. Yeah, and see, and then in my mind, I think, okay, that's already three different A's.
Mm-hmm.
She'll say Nana, but Grandma, who we call Nana in our family, is also Nana. She also has quite a few consonant sounds that she can say in isolation. So far, I've counted P, B, M, N, D, Y, H, and K, and sometimes G. Yeah, that's great. That's a lot of consonants.
Mm-hmm.
But we just can't get these isolated sounds into real words because she can't pronounce the vowel sounds. She says, so here I am writing this email wondering if you have any suggestions or techniques for helping my daughter to produce vowel sounds. I'm getting desperate. I really want to help my daughter make progress in her speech and begin to say actual words instead of just mama, dada, and baba. Thanks so much. So this is a really with it mom to realize it's the vowels. It's those darn vowels that are the problem. And boy, aren't they hard to treat, Kate.
Yeah. But, I mean, I will say this child, I haven't had too many kids that I have personally seen who did the initial consonant sound on a variety of words like that. Have you?
Sometimes, but she's only 16 months old. So see, or 19
yeah.
months old now. And I would look at this, I would really look at this like she's making, you know, that she probably is making progress. And I think that the mom, you know, is looking at it like, okay, 3 months later.
What words do we have? Yeah.
Right, and I can see her point, but with that many consonants, and I bet she does have some really subtle vowel differences,
mm-hmm.
but it's just that duck doesn't sound like duck every single time.
Some variety of a...
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, a lot of times when we see children that we think are apraxic and really qualified for that diagnosis, you're right, they don't have that many different consonant sounds in words. However, I will say that I have had lots of children that can do all of these consonant sounds and more by themselves. The problem is getting it combined with a vowel. And it sounds like that may be what this little girl is having difficulty doing. It's not really that she can't make those sounds. It's that she can't sequence it. And that really is the hallmark of apraxia or a motor planning disorder. But she doesn't care about the diagnosis, and neither do I. What we really care about is giving her some ways to target other vowels. But, Kate, did you want to say something before we started on that? It seemed like you wanted to jump in and say, I don't know if I've had this same kind of kid before.
Well, I guess I would say I think because you and I really, really, and I learned this from you, the master, really, really emphasize the exaggerated vowels in words that
right.
I don't do much sound stuff in isolation early on. I mean, she has a variety of initial consonant sounds, so it's like, okay. I just wonder if for some reason, you know, maybe her speech therapist has encouraged a lot of focus on those individual sounds, or maybe
right.
mom has felt like that was a start. But I would really, in the forefront, say, don't really do too much modeling isolated sounds. Really, really, really model single words with a really exaggerated vowel sound.
Yeah, too.
I think she could bump those vowel sounds up pretty quickly, really. I mean, that's
right.
a big assumption. But just because I think maybe that's the way things have been presented to this child.
Right.
We don't know. But, you know, I kind of wonder because I think.
It does make you wonder mm-hmm. if there hasn't been some focus on that. And, again, I so wish it would have worked out for this mom to be on so that we could have asked her that question directly.
I think she can still call in.
Not too late.
Because we want to ask you that just out of curiosity. Because I think it sounds like her comprehension, you know, whether or not her comprehension is good may or may not be relevant. But she does have that wide variety. And for mom to be aware of that, it makes me wonder, well, has somebody been focusing on that particular thing?
And I can see how speech pathologists would do that because they might say, okay, she doesn't have enough sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make sure she gets enough sounds. And I mean, I can see that from a theoretical perspective. But let me caution you, if you're listening and are a therapist who thinks that way, stop. Think about words, getting real words. And at this point, I would be a little concerned if I were the mom and thinking, oh, no, we just can't get these words closer. I would be concerned, but I wouldn't let it really stop me from still building lots of those word approximations. And it doesn't sound like it stopped this mom. It sounds like, you know, she's just got this genuine concern of, oh, gosh, if I could get her some more vowels, some of these words would be closer.
I just haven't seen many kids at all who have that many consonant sounds, even in isolation, who can't come closer on a wider variety of vowels. And I think that's because we're pushing words, 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 words.
Right.
And we really kind of overemphasize the vowel sound. So kids tend to get the vowel. I mean, I know we've already identified apraxic kids do sometimes have problems with vowels, but not all vowels. Not, you know what I mean? This is like a pretty big issue. And I kind of wonder about the presentation. But having said that, well, let's talk about what we do to target vowel sounds in our practices.
Well, like you said, the first thing we do is totally exaggerate it. So when I'm walking in the door, I'm saying, hi, you know, when they're hearing
that.
She is
not exaggerating that either.
That's exactly what I say.
I'm frequently on the cell phone with her, and I think, whoa, that was a high one.
Where'd that come from? And then, do you want to play? Come on, let's go. Really, that's how I talk to kids when I think that their vowel sounds are messed up. And again, that's not exaggerated for the show here. That's what I really do. You know, you can watch the clips from the DVD on the website if you don't believe me, because that's what works.
You were
kids.
Definitely born in the right part of the country to have the job that you ultimately have, because that southern stretch out the vowel thing works beautifully. And I just think, okay, she has a northern, probably out of New York, speech therapist. We don't mean to promote a southern accent, but it's just that is really emphasizing. And for most kids, even apraxic kids, vowel sounds are typically easier than those consonant sounds that this child has. So I kind of wonder, is that the approach that has been taken with her?
It could be, but, you know, kids who are, you know, black and white, no doubt about it, only apraxic really do have huge problems with vowels.
Right.
And vowel distortions, vowels that in my mind defy transcription, I'll think, okay, that wasn't really this A, but it's not really that A. I'm terrible with phonetic translation. I probably shouldn't admit that on air like this. But, you know, when I'm sitting there really thinking, how would I transcribe that? And I'm thinking of, you know, how exactly did she say that A? You know, sometimes my point about this is, kids with apraxia really do have vowel problems and vowel distortions, but this little girl may have more vowels than she's getting credit for.
Right, or could have pretty quickly if they change the approach.
If they kind of change the approach,
yeah,
and do the real exaggerated vowel thing. The thing that I do with kids, and I know we talked about this in preparation for the show, is do lots of animal sounds because those really are fun. And for this little girl who's not even 2 yet, who's 19 months old, who's a toddler, that would be just a riot to really use tons and tons and tons of animal sounds and play with her. And all kinds of little sound effect sounds all day long. Uh-oh. You know, you have 2 different vowels there. You know, whee, when you're swinging. And again, I would just exaggerate when we're doing that kind of play. And just, and like you said, Kate, if you're doing the focus on isolated consonants, you know, let's do a P sound. Pop, 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 pop. I would totally stop that. I would just not let myself do that anymore and change my whole focus to make it be about the vowels.
Please or pop or, you know, to get different sounds paired with it. Because the other thing I'll say up front is this child has every word is mama, dada, or dada, or however she's saying it, some consonant vowel combination. And I would really encourage mom to get away from saying, you know, say bye-bye, say moo, moo, say, you know, to use lots of single words in isolation.
Right.
Because I think maybe if she is aware of trying to break, I'm sure she doesn't say everything, you know, drink, drink, but it does sound like this child has that kind of set pattern. So to
that
really
reduplicated pattern,
to really focus on single words and stretching out those vowel sounds so that even if she doesn't say moo, it would be great if she could get ooh. That's another one I use when something's yucky, you know, if some, if a child puts the bubble wand in their mouth, I say ooh. And a lot of kids at work with can come close on that because it's goofy and funny and just vowels. And normally kids, I know we say that they have problems with the vowels, but a lot of times those are the earliest words I can get are things like uh-oh, in, on, eat. I mean, those are, you know.
Well, now I have had several kids, though, who were genuinely apraxic and who qualify for that diagnosis long after I've stopped seeing them when they turn 3, and they really have difficulty getting any word with a vowel at the beginning. And so when I know that, I do try to work on, like you just said, uh-oh, ooh, open with an O, eat with that E, apple, anything that starts with that vowel, you really, you know, that's a very good idea to start targeting words specifically like that for her, especially if she can't seem to do it when it's in the second place in the syllable,
right,
like with moo or ba. And I would dig out that Fisher-Price farm set and get as many different animals as you can have right there and just go to town really playing that too. Those would be my main strategies. Write down every word that you can think of that would be practical for her in her daily life that starts with a vowel. Like Kate said, on, off, in, up, you know, all of those words. And then also do the animal sounds ad nauseum. I mean, I would play with the animals, the little plastic ones. I would in play. I would have those in the bathtub. I would point them out on our walks. You know, when you see dogs, look, he's saying woof, 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 woof. Oh, you know, it's a baby doggy. He just says ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, make up things that don't even really, you think, oh, you know, this doesn't even make that much sense. Who cares? You know, just get the vowel sound emphasized right there. There's a bird. Tweet, 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 tweet. Eat, 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 eat. Really, you know, just do that all day long when you're looking at books, if she likes to read. And if she'll sit through that, you know, get animal books, get any kind of way that you can work in those vowel sounds and just push on those and kind of forget about whatever other things that you're doing or make this the most priority. But I'm with you, Kate. I would totally forget about doing any of those sounds in isolation, those consonant sounds by themselves, because that is not functional, and she doesn't seem to be able to generalize that.
Right.
And carry it over. One other thing that works a lot of times with vowel practice is using that bucket trick, talking into the bucket, and or it might be a big block that you do, or if you're in the kitchen and she's playing with your pans, you know, lean down into a pan and do, oh, and see if she'll copy that, because kids love that trick. Do you do that, Kate? Talk into a bucket or something.
I do. I don't know that I've done it with just single words, but I certainly, I yell into, I use the ball ramp toy that we both like so well a lot for that.
Yeah.
Same principle, that there's something cool about the echoing of their voice that intrigues little kids, and if you'll use that. I also think there's something, I don't know the exact rationale behind it, but sometimes when I work with apraxic kids or kids I suspect are apraxic, there's something about that kind of calling, or I always call it throwing their voice, like the yelling thing.
Yeah.
It seems to take a little bit of the communicative pressure off of kids, instead of, you know, look at me and tell me cat, tell me meow,
right.
Say boo. If you're kind of yelling it into a toy, like that ball ramp toy or a bucket or something like that, then it's more fun and less pressure, and it's a little bit easier for them. So,
right.
I don't know if it's a combination of all those things, but I do lots of calling things, and kids, a lot of times those are the first approximations they have, is when we're calling them from across the room, or we're calling them in the bottom of the toy, or we're, you know, they like anything.
Or hiding it in their shirt, or
right.
Your shirt, and you're pretending that you can't see it, you mm-hmm. know, and you're calling, let's call the cow, and, if, you know, let's call him cow. What do you think he's going to say? Moo! And, again, really emphasize that sound with it, and that that's a great trick. I use that all day long,
and kind
every
of
day.
Put the cow off to the side and mom model, moo, with a big exaggeration on the ooh part. And if you're calling it, I don't know, to me that works a lot early on with apraxic kids, that get it away, call it back. One,
right.
They think it's fun. Two, I do think it has to do with take the pressure off of them because, you know, I would suspect this little girl, as do most of the kids we work with, do feel some of that pressure because she's bright and she wants to say those words. She knows pig starts with P sound, but right now that's all she's able to get out. But if they take that direct pressure off and make it more of a, mommy did it, look, there's the pig, call it pig, you know.
Yeah.
She might just pop out something close to pig, or even if it's just eh. At this
exactly.
point, that would be a bonus. I mean, that would be one vowel sound she is yet to be able to get out, so woohoo.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's exactly what I would do, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at some of the other material I found about it. I think we've covered all that stuff. You know, it does sometimes matter, and we've talked about this a little bit. Sounds have effects on other sounds when they're when you use them in words.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be that it sounds like they're trying lots of different words and lots of different, you know, consonant sounds paired with vowel sounds. But again, do some real thinking about that to make sure that you're offering a big variety, because you may just not have stumbled upon a particular vowel that works with a particular consonant. And that's why we mostly, with these new talkers, we think about sounds, but we mostly are just thinking words, 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 words. Let me get as many different words as I can here. And then kind of take what they will do for us and then look at the sounds kind of as an afterthought. So that would be another thing, too. Don't make it, you know, you're really going to think about the vowels and all that, but don't get so hung up on being over-analytical that you just don't go for words, words, words. So that would be my advice there, too. If you're a speech pathologist and looking for a resource for teaching vowels, Strode and Chamberlain have their resources. Easy Does It for Apraxia, the preschool edition, has some nice ideas about how to use or target vowel sounds in play, like you're going to pretend that you're scared, so you're going to go ee, you know. And again, you can't really use those worksheets for, certainly not for a 19-month-old, but even for a 2 or 3-year-old, I think worksheets are overblown. And so you'll want to take the ideas that those authors have and work those into your play. And then another resource that I'm going to buy that I haven't yet, that I've been looking at for a while and have just recently rediscovered it, is Pamela Marcella. And has a new hour-long CD, or I don't think it's new anymore, has a CD about treating vowels, and she has different stages that you go through to target vowel production. And again, I'm sure that it's probably directed to for older children, but I think you can take some of those ideas and modify it if you're a pretty creative therapist. And so the address that you can order that is pammarshalla.com. And it's called Vowel Tracks for Improving Intelligibility, and it's on sale right now. So I looked at that today. That's going to be something that I'll be hopefully purchasing.
You tuned me into her book. What's Pamela Marcella?
Becoming Verbal with Childhood Apraxia.
Yeah, that one I thought was simple to read. It's really not a very big book, but it had some really good ideas that you told me about, and then I bought it and read it, and I certainly put some of those into practice every day. So that's another
That's a good book for a parent, too, if you're looking for another resource. Yeah. And she, I think, writes thin books that are easy for parents to read. And it's not tons of theory. She explains it a little bit, but really she gives you lots of different treatment ideas. She also has some nice case studies, so you can read about how things worked for particular children, and I always find that helpful. And I think lots of moms really like, you know, I've had more than one mom say to me, oh, I just read the case study part. The case study is the stuff I really liked.
Yeah.
So you can, that's a very, very good resource. And I believe that's on that website too, pammarshalla.com. And I didn't know about that website until today.
Oh.
So that's something to look for. Okay, do you have any other ideas that you want to talk about for getting those vowel sounds with this mom?
I think we've pretty much exhausted what I can come up with. Nope.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's a little bit of a section on that in my new Apraxia Phonological Disorders DVD if you need to see some of those things put in practice. And if you want to hear somebody really overemphasize vowels, take a look at that, because that's what I do, and I really do think that makes a difference with so many kids, that if I didn't just naturally kind of incorporate that, and then you do that, and I think people who think about being melodic and all that prosodic information, I mean, when you're more sing-songy, you're going to naturally overemphasize those vowels, and that's a big deal for kids who are apraxic, is getting their vowels more varied and getting their prosody or their rhythm and timing fixed. So,
and I think that, I mean, for those of you who are listening and thinking, well, I'm from New Jersey, you know. They probably think, actually, when I lived in New Jersey, somebody asked me if I was from Kentucky, and I'd never stepped foot in Kentucky at that time. So compared to a New Jersey accent, my Northern Indiana accent sounded very Southern, so go figure. But it can be learned, my point is, because I don't, in my opinion, have much of a Southern accent, but I have really learned when I'm working with kids, and so often when I'm not using it effectively, I remind myself, stretch out that vowel sound. Don't say more. Say more. And you give them a much better shot at getting out some approximation of that word normally. So just, you know, it can be learned. You're going to feel hokey doing it. But if you watch Laura's clips of the DVDs or the DVD, you will see it can be done, and it really, really helps your kids. So just fake it while you're really targeting speech. And
pretend like you're from the South and drag it out.
It can be done. It really does make a huge difference.
Yeah, and sometimes it really is the sequencing part of that. Is that she can't get the consonant with the vowel, So do try to stick to mostly the words that start with the vowels, or again, overemphasizing the, like you gave that great example then, instead of more, you're going to do more, like you just said. So think about kind of changing your approach there.
That's
too.
That's a real life example, because I really have had a number of kids that I got stuck on more with and couldn't get them to pop it out. And when I reminded myself, do it that Southern draw way, stretch out the or, darned if they couldn't say it.
So, I know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you just think about that with an individual word, why can't he say it, why can't he say it, and change just a little bit of what you're doing. Sometimes I'll emphasize a syllable instead of the one that I was emphasizing, and you're right, darn if they don't pop it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I talk and sing song all the time with open door, and then a kid might respond better to open door.
Yeah.
You know, and just you change the pitch, you know, you're going to say it a little louder, change the emphasis, emphasize one syllable over another, emphasize one word over another, and that little switch somehow makes it easier for them to imitate that.
Yep.
It's a good trick, too.
Weird thing. Raise your voice, lower your voice, make it more sing-songy, whisper it, screech it, and sometimes any one of those changes, and there's certainly not one answer. It really is child-specific, and even varies by session, varies by the time of day and where that kid is at that point. But if you'll play with your voice that way, I think that she'll have more successes getting closer on some wider variety of word approximations, and they won't all be mama, dada, tata, whatever they were. So,
yeah, good advice.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on now, and let's start to talk about how to know when your child is ready to move to phrases. And we've done these suggestions before in a show. I think it was probably about a year ago, don't you think, Kate, when we did a show about moving from words to phrases?
I guess it was early on in your first DVD. I mean, pretty, you know, along with your first Teach Me to Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it was last fall. So it's been about a year. So we're going to run through these. And I think we're just going to do these pretty hurriedly because I don't think that we need to stay here for very long. Again, you can see some of these examples in the new DVD, and you can also read the article that this information is from at teachmeashot.com, and the article name is under the expressive language section, and the name of the article is Making the Leap from Words to Phrases, and it's an article that has been really popular on the website. It's been downloaded a lot. I think lots of therapists have printed that and given that to parents.
Oh, good information.
Yeah.
I believe I have a time or two, actually.
Yeah.
So.
And I have too. I mean, I print my own stuff and give it to parents because, it's, you know, it's a visual thing. You can talk about it and you can do it, but sometimes parents need to go back and kind of analyze that information, or maybe mom's in the session and she needs dad to read it, or you pop it up on the fridge and every time you walk by it, you think, oh, yeah, we're working on two-word phrases now. So that, you know, I print them all the time and give to parents. Okay, so let's start talking about that. How do you know when your child is ready to move from words to phrases? I always use this guideline. I know that some therapists don't like this and start phrases a lot sooner, but I think that you really shouldn't start to target phrases until your child has a single word vocabulary of between 35 to 50 words, and that's because that's when typically developing children, according to research, start to combine phrases on their own. And so if your child does not have a vocabulary that's this size, like you can't write down 35 words that he said today on his own, then you still need to stick to single words until he is closer to that 50-word mark. And, you know, as soon as a kid can say bye and as soon as a kid can say dada, boy, most moms start trying to get bye, dada, bye-bye, dada, bye, dada. So, or as soon as I teach the sign please and as soon as I teach the sign more, moms start going for more please without realizing what a difficult step that is for some kids to move it from a single word utterance to a two-word phrase. So don't start it too early. Make sure that you've got a good foundation, a good vocabulary base. And again, some therapists disagree with that, but I really stick to that because I think then you get kids that just get so stuck on more please or stuck on one pattern like bye-bye mama, bye-bye dada, bye-bye whatever, which is fine, but then you never add enough single words to kind of move beyond that, and they do seem to get stuck. So in my mind, when I've really concentrated on adding lots of different single words, it makes that jumping to phrases a little less difficult for kids.
Right. And it's, well, I shouldn't say never. Rarely is it easy for the kids we see because they all have some sort of a language issue, but I totally agree with you, Laura. I think you spoon-fed me that info a long time ago, and I just see that that really works very well in practice. And the other thing is by the time they have that number of words, 35 to 50, well, let me stick in there. You can tell them, Laura, which of your word list has the early words that you teach.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, those words naturally combine because we've done a variety of words so that if they have those 40 words, 50 words, they have an arsenal of words that naturally go together and they
right.
can form
and
short phrases.
Set.
Right,
yes.
With them. So.
Yeah, and that's in the, you know, we are still in the process of redoing the website. I really think the best list for that, you can look for it in the sign language section, and it's in early signs or first signs or something like that. Scroll on down those articles. And for anybody that's a new reader of the website, all of the really most important foundational articles for you to read are going to be back in those early months. I started the website in January 2008. So on the left side of the kind of after you've picked your category at the top of the homepage at teachmeashot.com, there's a little category section. You can pick a category and hit go, and then you kind of land on what looks like another homepage, which was the previous homepage. And you'll see on the left side, there's a section that says archives, and it's got all the months. Really, the website is best to read chronologically if you start back with articles from January 2008 and work your way forward, because all of those really meat and potato articles are back at the very beginning. And so sign language, that whole category was written, you know, at the very beginning, like last winter and spring. And so sometimes you have to dig to look for those articles. And I'm trying to get the website redone so that those things kind of pop up first and in a different way. But, boy, that is easier said than done. So there you go. I'm not going to.
Well, and you know what, Laura? We never really clarified. I don't know if you did in writing or not, but with the email mom with the child with very few vowels, if they're using signs, because I know I certainly would with that child. And I'm assuming you would with that child. And I don't know that the mom mentioned that's something that they're utilizing. And I would, if she happens to hear this, say if you're not using some simple basic signs with her, go to Laura's website. And and I think she got the first DVD, so she's going to see that in there. But I think she just got it about a week ago. So don't underestimate the power of those signs. Always paired with words, and it's going to be those same words that we would model for her anyway.
Right.
Because I think that really is an important, and I never really know exactly the mechanics or the actual scientific rationale for why that works. I really kind of think of it in my simple way as that the motor planning of signs, as that improves, as their ability to sign improves, I think it also helps that part of the brain that helps the motor plan words. And so, I mean, it may not be specifically, but for sure in practice, there's some carryover between the signs are getting better, by gum, so are the words.
Absolutely. And if you have a child who's really kind of having difficulty even signing, guess what? That means you just need to do it even more. Mm-hmm. Don't just think, okay, I've done it for 2 weeks and she's not getting it. Move on to a different sign. For one thing, don't try to teach her 30 signs in one day. Pick three or four. At the beginning, I start with more, and then once they get more, then I kind of move on to other things. Sometimes I might teach two or three at one time, but if they're having lots of trouble, I just back up and work on more until they get it, and then move on and do some other things. But the sign language section has what I would consider to be the first words that you know, that we use in therapy sessions. And do you remember when I was writing that, Kate, I would call you and say, okay, here's my list. You, when you're working over these next few days, you think about that, and then you call me back with any sign that I don't have on there. And, you know, I did that for a couple of weeks, you know, just with all the kids that I saw and all the kids that you saw, and really kind of compiling that list. And, you know, I even asked my PT friend, Michelle, are there any signs, you know, that you might use? You know, you're kind of in a different world than me. What other things would you do? And so that's how we came up with that. And so I think it's a pretty exhaustive list there. And, again, not exhaustive meaning that there's 300 signs there. It's core vocabulary. It's words that every toddler should know. And I think it would probably, I went back and used the Rossetti list from Dr. Rossetti's Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale, his list that he used there. And I also have been contacted by another or a professor that does research with early language and with toddler stuff. So it'll be interesting to look at her list that she's researched herself and see if there aren't some, I'm sure there's big correlation there between those words. I hope we can have her on in January. She said that she's teaching on Thursdays when we normally do the show, but when she gets a new semester, she's going to be our guest and talk about that. So I think that'll be very exciting.
Oh, that'll be cool.
We'll have an academic person.
Yes. Well, anyway,
I have to be very reverent for that show. But
you might want to leave me off for that segment. Reverent isn't my specialty, but I will really try. Anyway, yeah, the signs that you have on there, just to steer her back to that. And the other thing is those words, they're early words, and they're relatively simple words. And we know from, well, you many, many, many years, and me nearly 10 years of in the trenches working with kids who are having trouble getting words out, that these are going to be their best shot at, you know, maybe coming close on getting these words out. So don't randomly decide that you really like butterflies, so that would be a good sign for your child to know, unless she really loves butterflies, and then that's fine. But just kind of go with what we've already identified as working. So
You know, and the only way to really know if your child has that level of the vocabulary level is between 35 and 50 words is to keep a word journal or a word list. And I ask moms and dads just to keep a piece of paper in the den or the kitchen or wherever they happen to be, or pop it up on the fridge. And every time they hear a child say a word that's not imitated, meaning that they didn't copy you, they didn't repeat what you said, they said it completely on their own, go over and jot that word down. And then, you know, that's when she says it on her own, that's your word list. And then when you start getting close to between 35 and 50 words, it's when you can start really starting to work on phrases. One thing that I like to remind parents, too, is that you need lots of different words besides just names of things or nouns. And it is typical for most babies and most toddlers when they're learning to talk for the large majority of their vocabularies to be nouns, and that's fine, but you can't really make a great phrase with milk shoe. You know, you've got to have some other action words or verbs in there. You've got to have some location words that are prepositions like in, off, up, and down. You've got to have some requesting words like more, please, or again. Some social words like hi and bye. So really kind of look at their vocabularies too. That's how my children's babies books are different probably from other moms, is because their word list, I have them all, you know, in little columns according to what part of speech they are. And I thought that was really funny when our oldest son and I were looking through his early stuff, where, you know, when you're a senior in high school and you have to get all those pictures and, you know, kind of make the collage, how they have those projects, and he was looking at that word list and saying, oh, Mom, you're really a freak, aren't you? Look at this.
Well, and you were in grad school and then a recent grad, so you probably really did it. Yes, it was quite
really
official.
Did.
Probably
it
wouldn't
was.
Be quite as official now, huh, Laura? But
no, it would be scribbled on a receipt from Kroger now, but still.
This is significant. Well, and Laura, you alluded to this when you emphasized in one day, and I think just to spell it out, that the point there was sometimes we do get, especially those parents who are really, really, really totally involved with what their kids are doing, and will say, well, about how many words does he have? And I think I used to make this mistake more often than I do now, but, and, you know, mom would say, 40, 50, you know,
yeah.
And I think after a week or two, well, whew, I'm struggling to get two or three, what's going on here? And then when I would stop and discuss it with her, you know, she might say, well, that's ever. You know,
right.
That's all the words he's ever said in, say, 2 years. And so we really mean those consistent. And if not in a day, then in a day or two. You know, really
right.
Not over the course of when he said his first word at 12 months and now he's two, I've heard 50 words. That's
right.
Not what we mean. Although we share in your delight with each word, trust us when we say that. But
right.
We mean consistent words.
Well, and sometimes things really are pop-out words, and that is a Pamela Marcella coined phrase, and that really means they said it one time. It just kind of popped out, and you never, ever, ever heard that again. You cannot count that as a word on your child's in your child's vocabulary if you only heard it one time and then never again. So, or they just repeated it. You cannot count it. And I've had a lot of parents that really are saying to me, oh, he's talking all the time. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, gosh, no, he's not, because all he's doing is he might be talking all the time, but he's got 10 words. Or, you know, he has 15 two-word phrases, and that's all he says all day long. So sometimes parents are really excited when they do the word journal because then they really figure out, gosh, he really is talking. He's saying lots of different words on his own. But sometimes they're disappointed because then they realize, okay, he's just really got 15 words.
Uh-huh.
But he just says them so much that I think he's
really talking, you know, a whole lot.
Yeah. Yeah, or they realize he hasn't said one darn thing on his own today. It's all been things he's heard me say. And again, I am so excited that he has become a consistent imitator and can really repeat, because that is a very, very, very important skill. But before you start working on phrases, your child needs to be saying close to 50 words by himself that he has to say, that he says on his own with no prompting from you. And so if things are mostly still repeated or he only has 20 words on his own, you've still got a lot more work to do to build that foundation before you start really pushing those phrases. All right, and one other point that I like to make to parents is before your child can start to say two-word phrases, he's got to hear a variety of two-word phrases. So, again, that means not talking to him in long, long sentences all day. And it means if you have gotten really good at just using lots of single words, you need to bump it up a little bit and start to focus on two-word phrases. And the very best technique that I've found for that is for you to start thinking about expanding every single word he says, so that if you are playing with cars, and he says car, like he wants to ask you for the car, you have him, you model car, please. If you're seeing a car go outside as you're looking out the window, you say, go, car. You know, if when he says car and sees that, if he is trying to take the car from you and just says car, you model my car. So you are expanding his single words to a two-word phrase. And that's a really easy technique that I think parents get the hang of pretty quickly. But what you want to make sure that you do as a mom or as a therapist working with a kid is not to get stuck in the same pattern. The thing that just blows me away about parents is somehow when we're making that leap from words to phrases is they think automatically, colors, I'll just say blue car, red car, yellow car. Oh, that is just awful. You know, you might do that one or two times a day, but there are many, 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 many other word combinations that you could come up with other than sticking a color in the front of that. So please don't do that. I'd much rather have you model a single word with a verb, a noun and a verb, or a verb and a noun, or a preposition, you know, go, or I'm sorry, in, or up, or out, and, you know, the back to the verbs, the action words, go, and stop, and open, and push, and pull, all those things, rather than getting stuck on those darn color words.
And certainly not if those color words aren't in his core vocabulary of 35 to 50 words. And if we have anything to say about it, Typically, those are not in their core vocabulary because we are not big on pushing those sound, those
yeah.
words early on.
Well, they're not functional. And don't you hate it when you get a kid that they'll say, I'll say, how many words does he have? And they'll say 25. And then I'll say, okay, let's talk about what those are. And they will say, you know, most 18 of those 25 words are a color or a number.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, uh-oh, we either, one, have a kid who is really being overtaught that by parents. You know, I think you were sharing with me that, you know, you've had some moms lately that they're really trying to teach colors before a kid has any words, you know, so that they're emphasizing colors probably earlier than they should be at all, or that a kid really is so visual that that's, you know, he doesn't realize that we're talking about the ball, all he sees is red, you know, because he's kind of leaning that way. And lots of children with autism do have those heightened visual awarenesses or sensitivities to the point that that's, you know, kind of naturally what they focus on. So then their parents are going to focus on that too. But we really caution you to expand those vocabularies and be looking for other things to talk about rather than what color it is or how many there are of something. Counting is another thing. You know, they'll say, oh, well, he says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So that's 10 words, right? You know, and I just think, oh, how are we using that to ask for what he wants to eat for lunch?
Eight cookies. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
I will say I use 2 that way a fair amount. But that's
2.
2, that's about it, yeah. Yeah, there are those kids, and I've certainly had them, who I'll say, what do you want, the car or the truck? Yellow.
Yeah.
Think,
oh, boy. And I'll say, no, car or truck.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you can use colors when, again, with kids who have, maybe you have a child who has, say, 100 words or 125 words, and they've not yet started putting those words together. That does happen, not very often, but I have seen that happen. Again, if that's the only way you can get a phrase, and if you have tried all of these other strategies and still can't get it, you know, I might do it for a kid like that. But as my first choice, absolutely not for phrases to target that. Okay. Let's see. The other thing that I do when a child is starting to do some phrases is I'm modeling lots of different words with that, but I pick a few early ones to start with. So if more is a good word for him, and say he's got 5 or 6 other great nouns like cookie, cracker, car, any choo-choo, anything that I can really withhold from him and make him ask for something over and over again, I'm going to pair more with that noun or please with that noun and really work on that. And then again, another early pattern that I do with almost everybody is bye-bye. You know, when you're cleaning up the toys, you know, you've just played with babies, and so you're going to tell every baby bye-bye. You're going to, you're putting away the choo-choos, you're going to tell all the different trains bye-bye. So that's something you can do too. And again, if your child has a big variety in his vocabulary anyway, it's going to be pretty easy to figure out which words to start pairing together. It may not be easy for him to say it, but you'll have some pretty good ideas of what would be some natural patterns. One other thing that I always recommend that you alluded to, Kate, is using signs when you're doing the phrases, because signing, again, really helps children be able to pop those words out and say those words. And especially children with motor planning problems or apraxia, they almost always need that verbal and motor movement to get that somehow coordinated for them to be able to do that sign.
Right.
And even if you stop signing, pull those back out.
Yeah.
Do it again. And the way that I use signs a lot is for me to do the sign and the child to say the word. So the sign at that point acts as the prompt or the cue for them to be able to produce that phrase.
Which is what's recommended, is to move away from prompting or cueing to as quickly as possible. And so it's a way of giving them some help or support in getting a word out, but less so than always saying truck, car, my car. So you could sign my car, and trust me, I didn't go to school for this, and I'm no signing expert. I cannot watch the deaf interpreter on TV, and I might catch a word maybe, but I
maybe
don't feel like, yeah, if it's like baby or something, I said, oh, baby. But you don't, you know, there are, well, Laura's DVD, the first one, Teach Me to Talk, really shows beautifully how to use them in a playful setting and, you know, appropriately with very young children. There are also websites that you could just look up a particular sign. There are books. There are, you know, it's easy these days to get information on simple signs to use. But so don't feel like, oh, I have to learn another language in order to help my child talk. You don't. It's simple.
No.
And the best signs that we use really are really, really obvious. I mean, they make sense. And that's why I can remember them because, you know, I don't really tend to use ones that aren't very practical and logical. And like I said, baby, well, guess what? You put your arms across your belly and you rock them back and forth like you're holding a baby. And I get that, and so do most young children. So, you know, it's not a big deal to say, oh, I have to, now they want me to use signs, because really it's fun, kids like it, and it really, really helps get them talking. So.
It does, and it takes the pressure off all that stuff being about their mouth, and then they can just pop the word out without really even, before they even think about it, sometimes they're, you know, saying it. And when you look at a lot of their vocabulary, sometimes those early words are all the signs that you've taught them, you know, in the past several weeks or months in speech therapy. So that's great. Okay, we are nearly out of time, and I do have a lot of other hints that I want to talk about with phrases, moving from words to phrases. I thought we would get through this today, but apparently not.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about the vowel thing, but it really is, you know, it's a big deal for some kids, so.
It is important.
Yeah.
So next week we're going to do phrases, finish this, and then I hope that we can finish sentences. When you move a child from phrases to sentences, and I do think that we can combine the rest of this, and so that'll be our last show on apraxia, and then we have some great guests and some great topics coming up for the rest of the fall, so I'm excited about all that.
I know, it'll be good. We keep moving over a year, can you believe it?
I can't believe it. Today's the 51st show.
We always said we could talk on forever about these particular topics, and it seems it's true, Laura.
Maybe so. All right. Thanks,
somebody
Kate.
Somebody else is interested. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye.